from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Hey, fantasy football owners. The road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster. Wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Derek Shelton Show brought to you by your local Parmore stores. Remember, if there's not a Parmore store near you now, there will be soon. The Pirates manager is on the Sullivan Super Service fan hotline. Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing HVAC provider for over 50 years. How are you today, Shelty?
I'm doing all right, Stark. How you doing?
Doing well. Doing well. I'm wondering, the first question that pops to mind is McCutcheon late in the game last night. He hit that single and looked like he came up a little lame at first. How is he doing? Is he going to be in the lineup tonight?
Yeah, he's in the lineup tonight. And I think over the – I mean, we gave him 3 days off. You know, he's got a cranky knee. And it's a situation where I think he's – and he feels he's good enough to swing the bat. Again, we're going to have to monitor it. But the rotational aspect's fine. It's just to go on straight and – to round in the bases. So, you know, last night just using Bay in that situation in case we get a ball in the gap.
Well, on the positive side, with what's been happening lately, McCutcheon, it seems like in a lot of these games, has just put the team on his back in some ways. So, you know, wherever the blame might lie for the losing streak, it's not with him. He's been unbelievable.
Yeah, he's been good. I mean, he had big at-bats the other day in L.A., and he had big at-bat last night. In the ninth inning. So, you know, again, he's grinding through some things, and we'd given him the days off, and now he's back and having better at-bats.
Have you gotten any indication from him, Shelty, as to whether he wants to be back next season? And what do you think that would you vote for that right now?
Yeah, I don't think there's been any indication of what Kutch has wanted to do. I think he's been focused on where he's at right now and what we're doing, and I'm sure at some point, you know, he'll decide how he feels, where he's at, and kind of go from there.
The losing streak has really put a damper on things, obviously. And now you guys have about, I think, six teams in front of you and a bunch of games, and it's sort of unbelievable that this has happened. Do you feel like there's almost a state of shock about the team?
I think there's a state of we need to catch a break. I mean, it's one of those situations where we haven't played bad baseball. You know, we've lost, I think, since the break, 9 one-run games. We've lost during this stretch of the eight. I think we've lost 6 one-run games. We're not finishing games or making the big play to be able to get us to a victory right now. And, yeah, it's extremely frustrating.
I think some people might quibble with that. I think as to whether you've been playing good or bad baseball, it's certainly been competitive. I don't think anybody would question your team's competitive spirit. But when you look at some of the games – whether it's pitches they would want back or the O'Neill Cruz game in Houston, I think there have been plenty of examples of bad baseball. Would you disagree with that?
I don't know. I mean, your definition of bad baseball may be different than my definition of bad baseball. We haven't executed. You know, that's I think that's fair to say. You know, the Cruzy game, and, you know, we can point at that, and I think that's really a bad analogy. The kid had a bad game, you know, and then he bounced back the next day and had five hits. So I think there's been some things we have not executed. I think that's probably more fair.
De La Cruz and his struggles, Shelty, I imagine you didn't think when you acquired this guy to be your cleanup hitter that you were going to be, you know, benching him so soon. Is it a case of him feeling pressure? What do you see there?
Yeah, he's still trying to do a little bit too much, and I don't think benching him is fair. I mean, he played last night. He had two hits, had better at-bats, so, you know, had a hit for us late in the game. But I think, yeah, to your first point, just kind of putting a little bit of pressure on himself and kind of going outside of the hitting zones that has made him successful.
I got a bunch of suggestions for questions here, Shelty, and one of them is with Key Brian Hayes. And while his average is up a little bit, the extra base power simply hasn't been there. Has there been a point where you've thought about or pondered benching him for a while just to give him a break?
No. I mean, I think we've talked about different things in his swing, and he continues to work on his swing. And as you know, I think we've talked about on the show before, getting him to get the ball elevated a little bit more, which, you know, he had the home run in L.A., I think is important. And he's continued to play really elite defense, too.
When you look at the season and the message that you're delivering in the clubhouse, Shelty, do you feel right now like you're still very much in it? Do you feel like something is slipping away here? What's the message and what's the thought and feeling?
Well, I mean, when you have a consecutive losing streak, there is some slipping away. But I don't think there's anybody that's giving up. I think there's the message is still like, hey, we have things in front of us and we have a month and a half of the season to go. I mean, this is a bad stretch that we've gone through, and we've been very consistent for a long period of time. And right now, again, we're not executing, and we have to.
Will there come a time, do you think, that you'll want to get a look at some of these young guys? Because the fact is, you have a bunch of guys on one-year deals, many of them who have underperformed. And meanwhile, you have guys like Henry Davis. York is another guy knocking at the door. Do you think that time is coming where you say we owe it to ourselves to look at some of the young guys?
Well, I think some of those young guys, like you've talked about, have gotten opportunities. And, you know, they may get other opportunities. And then, you know, of the other people you're talking about, there's guys we acquired. And, yeah, at some point we might want to get a look at them. But I think right now we're continuing to focus on the group we have here. And it's very easy to focus on the group below us when – you know, there's things going a certain way, but I think we really have to focus on our group that's here.
Is Endy Rodriguez going to play this year, do you think?
I don't know. That's a good question. You know, I think we hope to get him in some kind of games. Getting back to the major leagues may be just a little bit challenging with his rehab program, but he's looked really good. I mean, he was in Pittsburgh last week, and we saw him hitting a live BP off Jared Jones. His body looks good. I think everything that we hope to see, you know, when he came to Pittsburgh was exactly what we'd been hearing for people in development or people that had seen him down in Bradenton when he was working.
Do you think, I got this question too, do you think he's going to be able to jump right back in as a catcher, or will the nature of his injury prevent that? I'm even talking next year with Endy.
Okay. No, the nature of the injury won't, because of the fact that there's catchers that have had Tommy John. I think the one thing that we do kind of discount is the catcher does throw the ball the most, even though, you know, it's not hard back, it's the motion. I think the fact that Indy has the ability to play first, and he is taking ground balls right now just to make sure that he keeps his body moving. But the task of catching and doing that, we expect him to be able to do.
And then with Henry Davis, I mean, this was a guy, Shelty, that I'm sure everybody thought would be a key part of this ball club this year. Do you expect him back? That's part A of this question. And what do you think his position is long-term?
I think his position is still catcher long-term. You know, expect him back. I think, you know, if you're talking about in the immediate future, I don't think we have any plans for that. But I think he is a part of our future. And, you know, it's one of those things that we have to talk about in terms of players' careers not being linear. Just because Henry was 1-1 and, you know, got to the big leagues, like, there's a lot of major league players that have struggled, and it takes time. And I think we still believe that Henry's going to be a really good major league player.
You mentioned Jared Jones. Do you have a ballpark for his next start?
He's had the one start, so yeah, it should be in the next few days, just on turn. And, you know, good first start, just expecting him. We got to build his volume up with just the amount of time that he missed.
Derek Shelton on the fan hotline here, presented by Sullivan Super Service, the Pirates manager. Here's a strategy question I got, Shelty. Why not automatically put the first batter in the bottom half of extra innings on first? This person says any run after the ghost runner doesn't matter, so why not create a chance to get a double play right off the bat? How would you answer that, and have you seen other managers do that?
Yeah, I've seen other managers do it. We've actually done it. The interesting question I would have back on this is, like, if you're talking about the Dodger game the other day, then you're putting the winning run on base, which totally changes the dynamic,
yeah,
you know, in terms of what the score is. The other factor has to be is, like, who's the ghost runner? Who's the person on base? Is that next person going to bunt? Because then if you bunt, if they're the home team and it's a tie game, then you're, you know, a 260-foot fly ball away from doing that, and you're probably going to have to walk the next guy. So then how deep are you getting into the order? Like the Dodger series the other day, like, who's the one person you're looking to, where you're going to get to and where you're not going to get to? It's Ohtani, you know? So
yes.
There's so many factors to that question. Yes, to simply say, can you do it? Yes, you can. Have we done it? Yes, we have. But to say it's as simple as just automatically doing it, there's so many other factors of where you're at in the game, who's coming up, where you're at. Because if we walk into Ohtani, like, that's just not a good move. Does that make sense?
Completely. Yes. David Bednar, let's move on to him. It's just been quite a ride this year. He started off really poorly, and then I thought he looked like himself for some early parts of the season, and then he got hurt again, and man, this is not the David Bednar we've come to know. Is he still your closer? Have you considered moving Chapman into that role?
No, he's still the closer, but yes, we have some things to focus on with David. The fastball command, I think you've pretty much highlighted how the fastball command's been, you know, throughout the beginning of the year was not very good. He got to the point it was back to exactly what we had expected and seen. And then it's gotten to the fact that it's been erratic, and we have to get him back in the zone. I mean, our bullpen's been a little challenged with injuries, and there's been some adjustments to it right now. So we've got to get some stabilization there.
Shelty, this question I ask respectfully, we've talked about this before, but things are going so poorly now that people wonder, and I wonder, if you feel like you're managing for your job the rest of this season.
No, in terms of managing for my job, no, I don't feel that, you know, any more so today than I did earlier in the year. I think anybody that's in this position always feels that. So, no, I'm focused on winning games and making sure that we continue to play good baseball.
Did you get any sort of ultimatum before the year from Bob Dunning that this had to be a winning season?
Yeah, you know I'm not going to answer that question. You know we don't talk about what we talk about in-house.
Okay. Well, Shelty, good luck tonight, and we'll talk next week.
All right, sounds good.
All right, see ya. Did you say goodbye there?
No, he hung up too quickly. I was not able to say goodbye. He must not have been pretty happy about your last question.
Well, I thought it was a fair question.
It was a
Did
fair
you?
Question. Very fair.
And fair of him to say, you know.
And one that people are wondering
interesting,
about.
And very interesting that he didn't say yes to that question. Wait, what was the question?
You asked him if there
the
was an ultimatum.
The question was there an ultimatum that he didn't say no to that question, I should say.
Right.
No, there was no ultimatum like that. He didn't say that.
Just I'm not going to even answer. Not even going to touch it with a 10-foot pole.
Right. If that was never broached, he could have easily just said no. There was never any ultimatum like that. Instead, he went to, we don't talk about those inner workings.
So, Joe, do you think that there was an ultimatum?
Probably not a spoken one, no.
Yeah.
I don't see that coming from Bob Nutting, but maybe an unspoken one. Maybe an unspoken one that we certainly need to improve. Here's the thing. This season would feel a lot different to me if some of the younger position players were flourishing.
Right.
You know, then it would feel more like, let's say, 2012, 11 and 12 maybe, where you could see on the horizon here, you already had McCutchen starting to, you know, become an MVP, Neil Walker, Pedro Alvarez, Starling Marte on the way, Polanco, another couple of years, but you knew you had that guy and what we thought of him then anyway. You could feel that happening. I'm not sure position player-wise I feel anything of the sort. Like if Henry Davis was raking right now and Andy,
in the majors,
you know, whatever, Andy was healthy and having a good year, yeah. In the majors, and some of the other younger guys were you know, flourishing, it would have a different feel even amid a losing streak like this. But it just doesn't. And, you know, that interview was going to be dour at best because of what's happening. There's no way to make that one lighthearted. There just isn't.
How many big takeaways can you take from what Shelton said? I mean, he's repeatedly said Henry Davis, they still think he's a catcher. They still think he's in their big league plans.
Well, he did say, I said, all right, do you feel like you're managing for your job? He said, no more than I did earlier in the year. So has he felt all year? Like this is a year he has to, I don't know, have a winning record, be in contention in September? It almost sounds like, yeah, I felt from the beginning like I was managing for my job this year.
Well, that sounds like to me, despite an 8-game losing streak and free falling in the NL race, that he doesn't feel any extra pressure right now with them free falling and the eye through the looking glass being a lot more clear of what this season is going to become than at the very start of the year when everything was still an unknown and you're 0-0.
See,
that makes sense.
I think that could be a big storyline the rest of the season. Is, yeah, they're not really fighting for the playoffs anymore because that's becoming a pipe dream. But what about the manager's job?
What about the general manager's job?
I hear that too, but usually it's the manager who goes first.
Right.
It's usually the coach who goes first. I mean, and the way things are going, it's one piece of bad news after another. Can you bring him back if you lose 15 games in a row?
No.
I
don't see how you can.
This thing is just falling apart here. And every night it feels the same. But I do ask those questions.
You ask very good questions.
I ask those questions respectfully of him. I know, you know, there's people out there that want to come in firing on all cylinders. No, I just feel like I got to ask the questions that need to be asked. And I also respect Shelty and want to do a respectful show. So I think I strike that balance pretty well and strike it well when Paul's in here. I don't know what else there is to be asked of the Pirates manager right now. I don't. And I am pretty certain that pretty soon, and this is a question probably for next week, and I've asked him almost every week about the Skeens pitching limits, if that's going to come in here, because eventually it is. If they're out of it in September, they're going to scale him way back, I think, if not shut him down.
And that's why I was asking Andrew Destin about that. I also see the point of people saying, why would you allow Jared Jones to go back out there this year? He's thrown 90 innings. I would, just for the sole purpose of getting him to 130 innings, so that next year we're not having the same conversation,
right?
Saying that Jared Jones is healthy, he's at 150 innings. Well, he can't go past 165 or 170. You have to build him up. I mean, like it or not, that's just the new reality of baseball. Where if Jared Jones throws 120 innings this year, well, the targeted number is 160 next year. If he goes over that, oh, we got to worry about 2026.
Yeah.
That's why they're trying to get Skeens with minor league and major league innings, I think, to about 150, maybe 160, so that he can push to 200 innings next year. And if they expect to be in the playoffs next year, which they should, then you don't have to worry about putting him on any limits.
Is there any Aiyuk news today?
No Aiyuk news still, other than...
Why is Cabale leading us in that direction?
I don't know.
When he's putting out his yeet
tweets.
He
clearly knows something, but is not going to report it at this moment. And everything else that I'm seeing is just pure speculation. Some big Steeler fan account saying it's going to be a big day today to be a Steeler fan and Brandon Ayuk this. So we'll see. There's nothing credible at this point that has been reported by any big name source or reporter that we haven't seen already, that we don't already know.
Well, we'll see hopefully soon. And Kabali continues to ignore me today, which really ticks me off, by the way.
Kabali wants to know when we want to call him. And I said, how about coming up next?
Mike Greenberg has claimed that Steph Curry's shot the other day was the most memorable shot in basketball history.
I completely disagree with that.
Give me some that top it.
Jordan crossover for the sixth championship in Utah.
I'm going to put Steph's above that, but I hear that one, yeah. Are we including college here?
I can say, yeah, we could say college too.
I would say the Christian Laettner shot there. Is the most memorable basketball. Let me think here.
There's one that I'm thinking of.
The most memorable basketball shot of all time.
There's a Jerry West shot from like a mile away that I'm remembering that won a championship.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Or somebody won a championship.
It didn't win a championship. No. But it was like a half court shot that sent a game. I think they might have even lost that.
What about Villanova? Chris Jenkins hitting the three that beat my North Carolina basketball
Tar Heels
in the championship.
That does not compare to Steph Curry on his back heels winning a gold medal, clinching a gold medal from practically half court by chucking a ball in the air.
Well, it won a national championship.
It did, but I don't put it.
It was the final play of the game.
I don't put it in that category. I don't. If only Zeiss were here to argue with me. But you apparently will be. Jordan's shot, for sure. Larry Bird's put back Kyrie Irving's three-pointer.
Yeah.
No, I was at one of them.
Which one?
The one in Cleveland where Jordan went over and under Craig Elo to score the winning basket and win a series against the Cavaliers. I was in the building, Richfield Coliseum, watching that game with my dad and brother. Were you aware of that?
I was. Now that you make me more aware of it, I saw it during the Last Dance. They showed it.
How about Ray Allen's corner dagger to force overtime in game six?
That was an incredible shot. And if you look at I know we love to talk about analytics on the show, but they said there was like a 5% chance that Ray Allen makes that shot with the way that he was double teamed, backpedaling in the air from the corner.
That's a top five.
Yeah, that's up there.
Christian Leitner's shot is the most memorable basketball shot of all time.
Yes.
Jordan and Byron Russell is second, or was it Brian Russell? I can't remember. But this one, with 20 million people watching, wins a gold medal. I understand what Greeny's saying here. This one is top three. It's right behind Leitner.
Yeah.
It's second all time for me.
It's up there. I was thinking that this might just be recency bias, but that's definitely a good pick. What about Kawhi Leonard, game seven? Made basket, the one that bounced around against the Sixers. Texter pointed that one out.
That's a great call by that texter.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
That one's way up there.
Bounced off the rim four separate times. The entire building went silent. That's not better than the Curry one, I don't think.
That's one of those highlights that I can watch 1,000 times in a row and pick out something different from the clip every time. But so is this one.
What about Mario Chalmers with Kansas in the national championship?
Nah. Not really.
Dwight Clay ends UCLA streak. Jimmy V running around the corner
after the
final basket.
Dwight Clay from the corner.
These are all texter suggestions.
Well, Jimmy V was not off a basket, though. That was off a miss. Or no, that was off a basket. It was Lorenzo Charles putting the shot in. What the hell am I talking about?
I think that's
about
the play that I'm thinking
of. That might
of
be number one. Lorenzo Charles is number one. City Limits. That's number one above Leitner. That led to Valvano running around the court. He took an air ball and dunked it to beat mighty Houston. What are you going to do, a Paul pause here?
Yeah, I'm
throw
currently
it in
looking
there for
it.
Yourself. I forgot about that. All right, the three most memorable basketball shots in history are Lorenzo Charles' rebound dunk. Now, what about Jordan to beat Georgetown? Damn it. Are we going to include college in here?
I think we should, considering the... How about I pass the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame on my way back?
Did you didn't stop in?
Well, I was driving back, did not know it was on the way. And I passed it. And all my friends were passed out in the car. I'm driving, and I go, wait, what? Because we were in Springfield. We drove through Springfield, Mass. And I thought to myself, if we make this trip back next year, which a lot of us want to do, on the way back, on the way up, go to Cooperstown. On the way back, go to the Basketball Hall of Fame. How about that trip? That would be insane. But no, I did not get a chance to stop in there.
That guy with the mustache, is it Joe Fortenbaugh from ESPN? You like that guy? I do actually like him and his mustache.
Who?
I'll show you the clip. He's a new guy who's on ESPN all the time. He's got an unbelievable mustache. Anyway, that's beside the point. He said that the U.S. probably still wins the game even if Curry misses that shot, and he's right about that. He is right about that. I don't care, though. It was the game clincher. It was ridiculous what he did with two guys. The photos of it are phenomenal. So I'm going to go with this for now, until someone reminds me of another shot I forgot about. Lorenzo Charles, number one. Okay? Limits?
Okay.
Leitner, number two.
Okay.
Curry, number three. Jordan, Jazz, number four. And Kawhi Leonard's bouncer, number five. You like that?
I can get behind that, yeah.
I mean, that shot.
It's a top five shot. It's just unreal.
Somebody's on the bench going crazy, and then there's
Embiid.
Yeah, Embiid's looking at it, and you still think it's not going to go in. It's like the Scott Norwood kick in the Super Bowl. You still think is going to go in. And if you watch, did you watch the 30 for 30 on the four falls of
Buffalo?
Yeah, did you see they set Thurman Thomas and Bruce Smith, you know, on a couch all these years later interviewing them, and then they watch the Super Bowl. And that's exactly what Bruce Smith says as the ball's in the air. He's like, my God, every time I see this, I think it's going to go in. It's the same with the Kawhi Leonard shot. I think it's not going to go in. I think it's going to bounce out. I still think it's going to bounce out. So that's my top five. What's yours? As we try to move as far away from the Sheltie interview as possible.
I know. How riveting. Today is International Left-Handers Day. Any lefties we can put on the list?
I don't know. Did Chris Mullin ever shoot a shot like that?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Sean Myers pointed out Robert Horry and the shot that he made against the Kings.
Yeah. I just feel like, I hear, and this goes for Kawhi too, really. People, 20 million people weren't watching that shot, I don't think. I mean, this was a worldwide phenomenon that basically was putting an entire continent to sleep, you know, all of Europe and all of France. Steph Curry gave the nighty night to, you know, everything that went into it, it made it what it was. Anybody else on the text line?
I think some Reggie Miller's three threes in the final 12 seconds to beat the Knicks.
That's three shots, not one.
Or his third three.
That's one shot, not three. I don't know.
Iverson over Ty Lue.
No, let's stop this. Let's stop it now.
What about now Chris Muller's nine threes in a row at Penn State?
That one, the ninth one.
Yeah, the nine straight threes.
If someone got video of that, it would be up there. That would be up there.
It's like Wilt Chamberlain's 100-point game. Did it truly happen?
No. But this did. I was in a high school basketball game at Williamsville North, I believe, and it was one of those gyms that I'm sure you've played in, where the wall is like a foot from the baseline.
Oh, of course.
Those mini gyms. So I couldn't hear a damn thing. And I'm coming up the court and I see my coach, Brad Tischner, Mr. Tischner, hold up three fingers, like three finger brown.
Is that the play or to shoot a three?
That's the quote. Well, I'm so old, we didn't have threes then.
Oh, wow.
City Limits. That was the year before threes got put in. I thought he was telling me 3 seconds left in the half. It was play three. I thought he was saying 3 seconds left in the half. I'm bringing the ball up court. I heaved one from just inside half court and it went in and he still yelled at me. He still yelled at me, even though it went in.
So at that point, you just got to let it go. If you make that shot, you have to let it go.
Yeah,
and have a conversation maybe at the next buzzer. Say,
sure. Oh, I couldn't hear anything.
Why? But okay, whatever. We got away with it.
Yeah, there were probably like 10 seconds left, and I thought three. But
I put the Curry shot top three.
Thank you. I'm glad we agree on that.
Now, my order is still up in the air because I think Leitner's probably one, Jordan two, and then the Curry shot three.
What about Lorenzo Charles?
I know. That's the thing.
That to me, that's the most memorable basketball shot there's ever been because of the circumstances of playing mighty Houston. You know, it's a legendary upset. That factors into it. It's the reaction afterward by Jim Valvano and everything he became, you know, just this amazing, you know, symbol of never give up. And it was ridiculous what happened too. I mean, it was an air ball by, I think, Derek Wittenberg that a guy leaped out of nowhere, took and dunked at the buzzer.
Just grabbed the ball as it was around the rim and put it back in.
Over Elijah Wan, pretty much. Come on, that's the winner. And number two is Leitner. Did I say number two was Leitner? Yeah, those are the two greatest shots ever because of the factors of improbability, the stakes involved, everything. And then it's this one. I'm sorry. Go back and look at it.
What about Bo Kimble, left-handed free throw for Loyola Marymount in the NCAA tournament to beat West Virginia?
That's a pretty good call.
Shout out my guy Dante for texting that one.
Thank you, Dante. Oh, my God, if you've ever seen the documentary on that team with the passing of Hank Gathers and how it was seriously like divine inspiration what happened with them. When without him, they were just like another basketball team. You know what I mean? And they went in and they played defending national champ Michigan and put like a $150 on them. I don't know what the final score was. But if you don't get goosebumps, I'm getting them right now while you're watching that documentary, then you're just not alive. I don't know, the Schelte interview, that was really dark in some ways.
Yeah, that
wasn't
was
it?
Tough. Schelte is, you could tell right away that he is in a bad mood.
I mean, I was kidding earlier when I said I was picturing him like Nicolas Cage in the last scene of Leaving Las Vegas in a darkened hotel room with cigarettes and grain alcohol next to him and all the shades pulled. I'm not sure he wasn't. That was rough.
He said he's ready for his darkness retreat like Aaron Rodgers wants to escape for a couple days. Just be away from the world. Couple candles in there. No cell phone service. The bathroom's outside at a little outhouse.
Where's Schelte? He went to a cave. And that's a perfect place out in L.A., right?
Yeah.
You just head up into the mountains and just go into a cave for a couple days.
Schelte would have enjoyed my little cabin in the woods up in Vermont with no cell phone service. Thank you, Wi-Fi. And a little river, a little stream, rocks, and some bears. There were some bears. We saw bears.
Yeah, exactly. And you come out of the cave after maybe a week, and you hope that Ben Charrington has given you a little more help instead of looking down your bench every game and seeing Jared Triolo as your top pinch hitter.
And Alika Williams coming off that bench.
Oh, my God. I forgot about him.
What does Alika Williams do for this team other than play, like, defense, question mark?
He's not even here anymore.
No.
I don't know where he is. I don't know what happened to him.
Jiwon Bae. I was listening to some of Pony and Muller of them saying Jiwon Bae is just not a baseball player. Or maybe it was Crowley. They tried to put Jiwon Bae on the field and find a position for him, but he's just a guy that's fast, and that's really it.
They just got a guy. They just got a guy in here who's their cleanup hitter that they benched.
That
and
can't
then Schelte quibbled with me, saying I wouldn't say benched. He played last night. I know, but you benched him before that. If the definition of benching is you're healthy but not playing tonight, that's a benching.
Well, Joe, maybe they gave him a day off to get right.
I don't think. Well, he's gotten 2 days off in the middle of a
pennant. But they did
race
with Rowdy Tellez too.
This is a disaster, an absolute disaster. I could tell that was getting testy early, and it was getting testy late, and it was getting testy in the middle. There was nowhere to go there.
The season, I wonder what they think. Like, do they truly, I know the PR spin of it and the way that he said
it. The season's dead.
The season's over.
Yeah.
They're done. They have no chance.
The season should be, it's dead. You're right. It should be cremated.
Yeah, they're done.
All the stats and everything should be cremated.
If they do not finish with a record above 77 wins that they had last year, something considerable has to be done, or else what true progress can you point to other than Paul Skeens and Jared Jones? That's it. And if that's all you have, there are more significant questions than we have answers, and we've reached the tip of that iceberg right now.
Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. So coming up, let's talk about some of Shelty's answers. We'll replay them and listen to them. And your thoughts on the young guys. Like, when do we get to that point where you want to see Nick York? And what's the dude's name? The outfielder, Brian Cook? Is that it?
Billy Cook.
Billy. Any relation to Ron?
Not that I'm aware of.
Can we hear Ron's laugh while I do the rest of this segment?
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Hey, fantasy football owners, the road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster, wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we have a surprise call, don't we?
Yes.
The big boy, Mark Cabali, who is going through a tumultuous time right now, is on the Sullivan Super Service fan hotline. 50-minute mark on the fan brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge Route 19, Peters Township. Celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Hello, big boy. I'm sorry with what happened at the Athletic, but I think you're in for bigger and better things. How are you?
Pretty good, Joe. I was just taking a nap because, you know, I don't have much other to do right now. So catching up on my nap time. So I heard you and Shelty hit it off well.
Yeah, I mean, that just wasn't going to turn out well in the middle of an 8-game losing streak. There's no happy face we can put on that. But I have questions for you.
I might not have answers for you.
You may be more evasive than Shelty. What happened at the Athletic? Can you tell us?
I'm going to, how can I do this? You remember when Terrell Owens and Drew Rosenhaus was in his driveway and he just kept saying, next question, next question.
Yeah.
Next question. I don't know, man. They decided to move on. Can't dwell on the past. So, you know, kind of upset for a day. Put it behind you and, you know how they say it, wash it off and go get them tomorrow. So,
no, but something clearly happened that everyone else seems to know about and I don't. But you'll tell me when I see you in person?
Potentially.
All right.
If I ever see you in person.
Yeah, that's always a question. And then it was nothing nefarious. It was just a work-related thing,
yeah.
Right?
Well, okay. Yeah. You know, it's one of the best stories I've heard in a while was when the news broke yesterday that Steelers were practicing and somebody mentioned to Richie Walsh, did you hear what happened to Mark? And Rich goes, what, is he dead? I was like, geez, Rich.
He went to the end game right away.
Richie Walsh thought I'd died.
Well, I'm glad you're still alive. This seems to be the least traumatic, end of a job that I've ever heard with somebody. You seem to actually be relieved or happy. I think something big is on the horizon for you. McAfee has said he's reached out to you. True?
Yeah, I talked to him for a couple minutes, not long after. So, I don't know. You know, we'll see what happens there. Nothing to report on, so to speak. So, you know, a couple irons in the old stove there, see what's happening. You know, free agent, man. I'm going to come to your free agent.
I know. I think it's true that when one door closes, other ones open up. Who knows? Maybe we'll be working together on the fan someday. I don't know. Yeah. Anything's possible.
I was telling Pony and Mahler should be the Pony, Mahler, and Kaboom show. How about the Starkey, Zeiss, and Kaboom show? Or
that wouldn't be bad. Limits, you up for that?
That'd be fun.
Have you heard this? Have you heard when Paul starts checking out stats during our live show? Have you heard this, Kaboom?
Yeah, doesn't he try to stall though? Honey, you could tell he's looking something up.
Yeah, that happens frequently, which is why we made that little thing right there.
I did hear old Tony the other day.
Yeah, Jackass.
Paul, I'm a little disappointed. Paul looked like he was about ready to go off the deep end, but he reeled it back in. A little disappointed about his overall reaction.
Did I stutter?
Well, he never turns his mic on. That's the problem. He was actually raging at Jackass Tony, but he was doing it to a dead mic because he's worse than Ron when it comes to turning his mic on. But here's the real question for today. You sent out a cryptic tweet earlier that said yeet, Y-E-E-T, that apparently is translated to something big is about to happen. And does this, it wasn't related to your job, your next job or anything like that. So what did it mean? Was it Ayuk related? Do you know something we don't? Is something Ayuk related going to happen today?
Well, you know, you don't watch wrestling, right? Jey Uso and yeet.
No, I hate wrestling.
I was just watching wrestling, and it was just yeet. Well, you know, Joe, I'm at the position of put it this way. Unemployed sports writers don't put their names on things that are a fluid situation that have proven to be changing a heartbeat at a whim's notice. So I'll just put it this way, and this is probably the most I can give you. There's been some rumblings today about the Ayuk to the Steelers. Any further than that?
So let me phrase it this way then. Let me phrase it this way.
Things change so quickly.
Yeah, I hear you for sure. If you had to bet everything you owned right now on Ayuk coming to the Steelers or staying in San Fran, what would you do?
In the long haul or today?
I mean, before, you know, this season is if I said to you he's going to play for the Steelers or Niners this season, you had to bet everything you own, which one would you go with?
I'd say the Steelers. Mm. Yeah, I mean, I would definitely say the Steelers. I mean, at this point, Omar's putting it out there. I mean, you know who has the least leverage is the 49ers. I mean, Ayuk got probably the most. Then the Steelers and Omar Khan has the second. I mean, Omar probably basically said, here's my take it or leave it deal. I know Brandon Ayuk wants to come here. You either deal with him all season and a potential issue brewing, or you trade him to the only team that he'll sign to. Omar knows this, so just wait and be patient. And it's either going to, you know, eventually, who knows when that will be. Could be today, could be in an hour, could be a week or two. I think he'll be here.
Do the Steelers have a player that the 49ers consider desirable, a realistic player that they can include in this?
No, probably not realistic. I mean, they're looking for a receiver. I mean, all the reports out there is they're looking for somebody. Maybe it's a thing where you get draft picks here, then you move somebody else and get a receiver somewhere else. I don't think anybody like a Calvin Austin would interest him. And what I'm under the understanding is Steelers don't want to move anybody at all. You can't move Alex Highsmith. I mean, I mean, you would just give him away for free with the money they already gave him with his restructure. You can't do anything like that. Do you want to give up a guy like Nick Herbig, who could be a potential star in this league when T.J. Watt is, you know, who knows how long he wants to play? It could be a year, it could be 10. I mean, J.J. retired at, what, 32 or 33. So you want to keep him around. So, no, I mean, I don't think you want to get rid of any of these guards yet, James Daniels or anything. So, no, I don't think there's anybody on the roster that would be like, okay, make sure you put him in the package. So they would have to probably make a secondary trade with another team to fill their needs, which they could probably do.
All right, big boy, you go back to your nap. Good things are going to happen for you. I'm sorry for what happened at the Athletic, whatever it was. But good things are going to happen. I'm convinced of that. And I'm sure you've seen
I won't get to talk to you tomorrow now since you used it up today, huh?
No, we can talk again tomorrow at 12:40.
Can we talk about the Pirates and how I predicted the collapse was coming, and Austin Bechtold, old Austin City Limits, was calling me crazy, and I said, kid, you are young. You will learn one day. Never trust the Bucks.
You know, Mark is very much a big believer and lover of sending me gifts and anything that he can find on the internet when the Pirates struggle. He sent me a great, you could say it if you want, Mark. He sent me a great one the other day of the Titanic completely collapsing into the water.
And did I send you the one with the white flag waving too?
At some point you did, yes. He loves sending the Pirates are done gifts.
It's sad. It's truly sad. But, I mean, you've been around as long as me, Joe. 50 years of this stuff, you just get numb to it all now.
Yeah, it's very predictable. Well, thank you, big boy, and good luck. And who knows, we might be seeing more of you, not less of you. See you, man.
Thank you, Mark.
We'll see you, brother.
Talk tomorrow. What a man he is, huh, City Limits?
He sounds like a man still in the know.
Man, this Aiyuk thing. I really wish it would end one way or another. I can tell you that.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking up, James Coe? Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.